2, and currently in the city, we're looking at a temperature of 21 degrees Celsius. The wind from the north-northeast at 10 kilometers per hour, gusting to 14 kilometers per hour. My name is Michael Welch, and right now on the line, I believe we have Joanne. Are you there, Joanne?
Yes, good morning, Michael.
Okay, Joanne, thanks for joining us. Joanne, as I mentioned earlier, is a woman who's who's appeared in front of the family court and has basically issues surrounding an abusive partner and attempts to protect children from that partner. Joanne, I was wondering if you could just, before we talk about the inquiry itself, if you could maybe just relay a few of the specifics, like reacquaint people with the specifics of your own situation.
Yes, absolutely. I did experience domestic violence, and I had very, very founded safety concerns that my children were being impacted by similar types of experiences. And unfortunately, nobody warned me, and I brought it to the attention of the court and to the attention of the so-called experts who were supposed to be reporting to the courts. And I experienced what I heard from Mr. Mackling's comments, experienced exactly what he's talked about. I was basically warned into silence. I was warned by attorneys, and I was warned by the court. And it gives the impression that abuse doesn't happen. And it's not only very unfortunate, but it is directly in conflict with the concept in the best interest of the children.
And, I mean, you did have people who were able to, social workers who came to investigate the situation. And, I mean, your assessment of, were you able to sort of demonstrate that that assessment was somehow flawed?
The assessment from start to finish was flawed. The process was set up unfairly and imbalanced. There was unequal time, allotted to myself and the other parent. The other parent was given time to raise their concerns that I was not given. I wasn't even allowed to know what was being alleged against me. Anything that I alleged was given directly to the other parent to come up with what my evidence shows were complete fabricated responses to deflect responsibility away from behavior that was dangerous to the children. And I, have attempted to bring that to the attention of the court on several occasions. And if the court does not want to hear it, the court doesn't have to direct their eyes to it or have ears open to it. It's not something. I'm not the only one alleging this or complaining about this, especially mothers, but parents have concerns, and these aren't concerns that come out of just simply we're dissatisfied with a judicial decision. We are dissatisfied with having our rights taken away, and we are dissatisfied with being silenced, and we are dissatisfied with the fact that we may go before a judge who is pro-father. I want to go before a judge at some point who is actually pro-evidence and pro-truth and pro-child. I've yet to have that experience. I hope I will someday.
Now, could you just to give us some sense of the the tolls of the situation? I mean, this we're going back about a decade, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, a little bit more than a decade with all of the events that have taken place. Yes.
Now, how far back has having to go through this court process? How far has that set you back? How has this devastated you, if that's the word for it, financially, emotionally, academically, career-wise?
Absolutely, yes. Any drawn-out high conflict, and high conflict by that I mean abuse-related, and those things have a definite impact. If the court is not encouraging and supporting the fact that people need to get in, get the deal done and be able to move on with their lives, then it simply becomes a battle of who can out-afford the other party. And most likely, it is the woman who has the lower income. My career has been affected because this takes up so much time. It ends up taking time away from a job. Parents who are in certain work roles, I had difficulty getting time off work. I had difficulty going to my boss at the time when much of this was going on to say, I'm sorry, I need to be in court. I can't be here. I can't be doing my work. I can't be answering my phone for you. And I can't be earning that paycheck that you are giving me at the end of this 2 weeks. And it really has a negative effect. Employers don't want to hear that. And they wonder, where are you going? Why is this taking up all of your time? And there's just no consideration for the fact that, you know, 15, 20 court appearances over the course of a year, that's a lot of absences from a job and from training opportunities and things like that. The costs associated, I've heard people complain about, you know, a friend, you know, just spent $15,000 on his divorce. Well, I've got news for you. I've spent $50,000 in a year that I don't have to spend but was unable to get out of the legal battle. If it's a case where it does not take two to tango, and people do not realize that. It takes one party who is intent on dragging this case on and on and on, and you have no choice but to go along.
Now, Joanne, you've been following the current inquiry into Justice Lori Douglas, or at least, you know, following the press reports. Is there anything that's come out so far that is sort of like a major red flag in your mind?
There have been several red flags, Michael. Yes, absolutely. I've been following the news, so to the extent that I can use those pieces, that's what I have to go on. I have not personally attended the inquiry, but several things come to mind. Mr. Mackling did raise his concern about why certain questions aren't being asked. I 100% agree with his assessment. There are questions that aren't being raised that should be raised. And people who aren't in the system or haven't been involved with a divorce or separation that has gone into court, they really don't know what is going on. So for people who have been in it, yeah, we do have questions. I think for myself, I feel it's a huge conflict of interest that Associate Chief Justice Lori Douglas, part of her role was to assign judges to cases, and with her husband Jack King as a practicing family lawyer, I do want to know from the Justice Minister or whomever, what is Jack King's record, what judges have heard his cases, what influence has Lori Douglas had on the assignment of cases to Jack King and to others. It certainly begs the question, what social circles are judges traveling in? Who is going to be siding with who? What, you know, do judges have favorite lawyers that they're likely to side with? Are they sympathetic to certain issues that might influence who gets assigned to whom? It really, really does leave a huge gap there that is yet unexplored, and I do believe it does need to be explored. It's destroyed. Well, to say I had any faith in the system would be a gross overstatement, but this has completely, the subject of this inquiry has, and the omissions right now that I'm seeing, have really, really solidified the distrust that I have in the system.
Mm-hmm. And especially considering that in family court, what you're doing is basically deciding the fate of children and like what's going to happen to them.
Absolutely. If that is the goal, that's certainly what the province claims it does. I haven't seen that from the other large number of mothers that I've spoken to and some fathers. we are very concerned that judges are not making decisions in the best interest of the children. But certainly when you look at it in the context of this specific inquiry and Sheila Block's comments, or her, one of her primary arguments at the onset of this inquiry was that Justice Lori Douglas should not be held accountable for her husband's actions or his conduct. I'm not directly quoting, but that's the paraphrasing that I took from it. I'm really, really struggling trying to get my head around this, because as a mother, as a woman who has sat in family court, that is what our family courts do. They sit in judgment. And as a mother who has experienced domestic violence and who has concerns about the safety of her children, when a judge sits there, quite frankly, from what I've heard, I'm not the only one, again, that mothers who come into court, and Mr. Mackling also addressed this, that when mothers come into court and there's a history of violence, what happens is that the courts turn on us and blame us for our children's responses to the violence, and they blame us for the violence that we've experienced. And that's exactly what Justice Lori Douglas feels she shouldn't be subjected to. So instead of this being an issue where women should have rights to conduct themselves to some extent in their marriages, in their separations, in their divorces, and in their efforts to protect their children and their children's well-being, should we be judged? Lori Douglas, I would have no doubt, has sat in judgment, in harsh judgment, of mothers for trying to protect their children, for trying to get away from violent partners, for trying to have some peace and safety in their lives, and yet she does not want to be subjected to that same criticism. So I think what we're seeing is a double standard, completely, and I'm not buying it at all. I find it offensive, actually.
So is it fair, then, to, because the way this inquiry is unraveling, or the way it's unrolling, we're basically, we're pointing to the misconduct of Mr. King and potentially Ms. Douglas, but you do see sort of larger systemic aspects to this the situation that go beyond simply this one instance or indication of malfeasance on the part of Ms. Douglas, potentially.
Absolutely, absolutely. One of the things that I think is a systemic problem, and it's this tolerance of this problem that also Mr. Mackling talked about, that, you know, what I heard come out of the inquiry early on during Alex Chapman's testimony and cross-examinations was that he was, I believe, warned or strongly cautioned, I think it was warned, that Lori Douglas and Jack King are powerful enough to make his life miserable, and that he really should have second-guessed his decision to come forward or to speak out. And Mr. Mackling did credit him with coming forward to shine light on this issue, but I have been warned personally, and I would imagine that there's lots of other mothers and or parents out there who have been basically strongly suggested to them that they don't speak out against a judge. If you've had an issue with a judge where there has been a bias or an error in law or a lack of evidence that has been used to support one party and credible evidence that supports another party that gets ignored, or evidence of abuse that is buried, I think that we should be speaking out against something like that. That is judicial conduct that I think is unacceptable in any courtroom, and certainly in family courtroom. It does not belong there. But I was personally warned on more than one occasion, do not challenge a judge. Do not speak out against a judge. You can speak out in general against the system, but you can't speak about specific injustices that you've faced. And that really gives the false impression that judges are doing what we expect of them. If we're silenced on that issue, then people get to go on believing that they can walk into court and get a fair hearing and that their children's interests really, really will be considered. You know, the law isn't even being applied. If you add a judicial bias or a judicial preference on top of that, parents don't stand a chance, and children are subjected to, like Mr. Mackling said, the child's views in that particular case clearly would not be considered. The judge made that explicit, and the law makes room for that. The law makes room for a child's views, and what I've seen in my own case is that when the evidence doesn't support the conclusion that a judge wants at the onset, that evidence gets discounted, it gets discredited, it gets ignored, it gets buried, it will be buried even before it comes to a judge in the hands of a deceitful social worker or a psychologist who has their own bias. It really is not, you walk into a court of law and it is not about truth and evidence. It becomes about money, power, who has a preference for what types of outcomes. If you were to call up a family lawyer just at random, pick 5 or 10 lawyers and call them in the phone book, they would each be able to give you their assessment of a judge and say, this judge pro-father, this judge pro-father, this judge pro-mother, but now a little bit pro-father. This judge, you know, they would give you their own summary. And again, what I've never heard from any lawyer is, this judge is pro-children, this judge is pro-evidence, this judge is fair, this judge will balance everything. I haven't heard that. And any judge that I've come across who I've been told does read everything, what type of lens are they applying to that? If they are reading it, reading material with a lens or a slant that is against one particular party before a case is even heard, then it really doesn't matter how much you put into a case. The decision is already made.
Yeah,
that's what we're seeing.
I'm afraid that we're at the end of our time now, but I want to thank you very much for sharing those insights with us. And hopefully we'll hear from you again, because we're not finished with this issue, so we'll hear from you again at a later time.
Thanks for tackling this, Michael.
You're quite welcome. And, yes, that was Joanne, someone who's appeared in front of family court and has pointed to some of the systemic problems within the family court system. Before that, we heard from former attorney.